that? Is that good?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
You should have kept going, dude. Why'd you stop?
Can you smell what the Aftershock Central podcast is cooking? How's that?
Wow.
Can I go into WWE?
That was like Randy Savage versus The Rock.
You know, you gotta have fun, bro. I like The Rock. I like Randy Savage. Why not combine them? Yeah. Step into a Slim Jim. Oh, yeah. God, that was the best commercial ever. I wish Randy was still around to do those Slim Jim commercials.
Yep.
I don't think the Slim Jim even does commercials anymore. Anyways, sorry. That was, sorry. Is that how they say it in Canada? Sorry. Yeah. My wife loves when I watch Canadian YouTubers, because she can always tell. Like, I'll be watching one, and they'll say something, like, oh, sorry. She's like, are they Canadian? I'm like, yeah. Welcome to the Aftershock Central podcast. That was kind of an in-joke. If you listen to the Valiant Central podcast, the Valiant Central podcast started beef with the Aftershock Central podcast, except for the fact that Travis and I are on the Valiant Central podcast, so we technically started beef with ourselves.
Yep, and I'm the only one that took offense to it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Well, we didn't ask Dewan, so we'll see.
That's true. Ronnie's back.
I am back.
Welcome back, Ronnie.
It's welcome to be back.
I'm just being polite.
Oh, okay.
I'm not actually welcoming you. I was actually going to make fun of you, but Travis told me I couldn't do that.
That's because Travis is a good boy.
He is a good boy. Thank you, Travis.
And I'm giving the orders now, apparently. I'm a long way from intern days.
Yeah. Yes. How was your, did you have a good field trip into the warehouse? Is that where you've been? Where have you been?
Yes, I've been into the warehouse. I've been into Neverland. I've been everywhere.
Cool. Full crew, so that's nice. It's always good to have a full crew. We don't have any news this week.
Nope.
Ronnie, you haven't been here in like 3 years. Do you want to say any words on some of the books that have come out that you've missed?
Let's see. Descendant was amazing for issue one, which
yes.
You guys pretty much recapped that last issue.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And
I did miss you for that one. I did shout you out at least, right? Because you're my conspiracy theory buddy.
Yeah.
Travis
I
thinks
mean,
we're
I,
crazy.
I guess you did. I don't know. I don't listen. I'm not on it.
You did.
I know.
Yes.
That, I think, like that, we called that one, like, when we got the preview copy, way before preview copies.
Yeah.
That it would be, like, the book of the week. And it pretty much was.
Yes.
And it had some stiff competition with other stuff, but.
Sure did. Cool. Let's get rolling. You know, Ronnie, you haven't been here. I'll let you pick the first book this week.
Okay. So since I haven't been here for a while, and this feels like it hasn't came out for a while, I'm going to pick The Last Space Race.
Well, you know why it feels that way. Because you haven't been here!
I know.
Sure, we can do that. The Last Space Race, number 4, written by Peter Calloway, with art by Alex Chabow, and colors by Natalia Marquez, letters by Marshall Dillon. So you picked it, Ronnie. What'd you like about this book, or maybe hated?
Well, I didn't hate anything about this book.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
I don't know where to start, really.
Let's start with what's the guy's name? Sasha, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This was a very different issue than, I think, the previous ones. And we definitely got a perspective shift, I think, with this issue by focusing mostly on Sasha. I know Travis and I had some questions with the way that issue 3 played out in terms of, like, is this happening in real time? Is it, like, flashback stuff that's being written to a story? And I don't think any of that stuff is addressed. But I really enjoyed getting Sasha's backstory. I think it might be a little more complicated than I'm used to in a lot of comics. the way that the presentation was done, because of the fact that you do still have these flashbacks. But there's some like unanswered questions, right? When Sasha's going through the shrink evaluation, the shrink's like, yeah, we can't have him go to space because he's going to kill everybody. I mean, I don't know if that's exactly the words that were used, but that's kind of the impression that I got. And I don't necessarily know that that's a fair assessment from the shrink. And I had some questions about what you guys thought about that. Because I don't think Sasha necessarily did the wrong thing in that first mission. But at the same time, like, I wondered, like, what exactly did he do? Because there was some, like, weird imagery going on with those flashbacks, right? Like, he's talking about his kid.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the Earth crushing his kid. And,
like, yeah.
It like, felt like it was a little more esoteric than literal.
Obviously, it was like a metaphor, right?
Well, yeah, but no. I was trying to figure out, like, was it an actual metaphor? Because what's the timeline for that mission taking place in relation to the rest of the book?
Oh, yeah. Good point.
You're talking about what happened in this issue?
Yes.
Like, I think that I assume what we're seeing now just immediately predates, like, where the comic opens, where he's drifting in space.
Okay, so the flashback scene in this issue, where is that in relation to the rest of the book, though?
I mean, I thought it was Earth orbit, like, in this issue, but, like, thinking back, I thought that it was Saturn orbit in the first issue.
Right, and that's why I was a little confused as to the exact timeline. 'Cause, I mean, it definitely takes place before that opening sequence of issue one, and it definitely takes place before the events of issue three, but it's after the stuff in issue two, right? Because this is before they figured out that there's this, like, alien... Well, I'll just say an alien invasion force. Like, I'm just assuming that's what it is.
Right.
Because they don't know about the aliens, right? You have the space station arm that's, like, being controlled by something when Sasha's doing the spacewalk.
Well, there's, like, isn't there a thumb drive in the console?
So is that a callback then to the, like, international spy thing in issue one?
Yeah, that's how I took it.
Okay, see, because I took it as it being the aliens taking over this thing.
Well, like, in the last issue, I feel like the last page, they basically say there's a saboteur among them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I tend to take these things at face value, so I assume that that's correct, and it's a question of, well, who is it? Which I think that's why, in this issue, it's interesting that you kind of pepper in that he, like, is suicidal or has a death wish, you know? Because it seems like, I don't know, red herring or not, they're suggesting that, like, what if he sabotaged himself or something, you know?
You saying Sasha sabotaged it?
I mean, I think that based on them saying that in this issue, that's maybe your assumption. But I guess I'm not sure about his motivations, like why he would need to do it that way.
Well, I mean, I don't think Sasha sabotaged the mission at all. That's why I brought up the whole thing with the shrink.
Yeah, they want us to think that he did it because but like he's their or could be their scapegoat later on.
Yep.
If it goes that way,
it's like that you know that fantastic Twilight Zone episode with what's his name, the captain from Star Trek. I'm not a Trekkie, sorry. You can send your hate mail
Shatner?
to Rambar 316. Yeah, Shatner, the one on the plane, you know, with the monkey monster on the wing. It's like
Twilight Zone.
Yeah, Twilight Zone. You know, you're introduced to this character and you think the character's crazy and maybe the character's doing stuff on purpose to sabotage something, but then eventually at the end of the story you figure out, like, you know, what you actually saw is actually what happened and this person was not necessarily a bad person. I wonder that about Sasha. Like, you get some conflicting stories, I think, maybe with Sasha. And maybe that's why some of the stuff about his childhood is introduced. When they're running away from, like, the communist government or whatever. But I don't know if he's... I mean, he's not a bad guy, right? Like, he might serve as some kind of foil. But you know, he might just end up being the hero of the story in the end. I don't know. It's like the first time we've really focused heavily on Sasha, so I'm kind of undecided on what I should think about the guy.
Yeah. Yeah. That,
well, I thought...
Go ahead, Charles. Go ahead.
Okay, so, I mean, like, I just thought that it was a nice kind of juxtaposition of telling the story about his dad sacrificing himself, and that's kind of what he does at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And whether maybe that ties into, like, in that moment, like, doesn't hurt that he maybe is suicidal, and he's like, yeah, okay, why not? Sure.
Right, and that's why I don't see, like, the problem the shrink has with him being suicidal. Like, I mean, he wasn't really being suicidal. He saved the mission.
Well, he says in issue one that he doesn't expect to come back. So they all know it's a one-way trip.
Yeah, but that doesn't make him suicidal.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Was it because, you know, it's uncharted territory, so it's experimental?
Yeah.
So there's that part of where you might not make it back?
Dude, let me tell you, if Elon Musk came up to me and said, hey, Martin, I want you to go to Mars and colonize Mars, I would be like, hell yeah. And I know for a fact that it might be a one-way mission. But it has nothing to do with me being suicidal. I just fucking want to go to Mars.
Yeah, good point. I'm with you on that.
I think Travis disagrees.
No, I think we're on the same page, but I think that, like, if it's understood, like, you're not expecting to come back, you know, like, I don't know. It seems to fit for me. Like, he's not worried about his life, you
know? Yeah,
yep. Yeah, but I'm curious what Ronnie thinks.
No, I'm same thing, like, as what Martin was saying. Like, he knows that basically it's going to be a one-way mission, and he doesn't expect to come back, and he's at peace with himself for that, and it is okay. But I think on the grander thing, is that he can be the scapegoat for them and be in the saboteur, or this is why this mission failed if it doesn't pan out the way they want it to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Government ruins all things.
Yeah, see? Tinfoil hat.
MK Ultra's in charge. God dang it, they did it again. Mind control. That's how they move the spaceship arm. Mind control. By the way, that's a terrible design for a space station. I just want to throw this out there. Because they've got a tank of oxygen and a tank of hydrogen just, like, chilling outside the space station.
Literally right next to each other.
Yeah, literally right next to each other. That's a terrible thing. Like, yeah. I just finished rereading The Martian. So I understand, like, wanting to have things be convenient and whatever. But, man... Like, you've got this thing in space. If a little, like, speck of something comes in and just, like, swoops through the tank, you're done. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Seems like a terrible design for a space station.
It's like the Titanic of space.
Yes. Except minus the iceberg, plus space dust.
Well, I'm just saying it's piss poor design.
Yes. Yes, I agree. What else you guys got on this book?
Okay, I was just curious if you guys think, like, the ship, they like, launch away in a ship that is more like a mobile vessel, right?
Yeah.
So, do you think that ship is going away from Earth or going towards Earth?
I mean, isn't that the one that they're sending to Saturn to figure out what the anomaly is?
That's what I figured.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I assumed, too, that they were on their way, because why go backwards?
Yeah, yeah. Although, I mean, it did seem pretty close to Earth, though, right? Because I think after he does his little maneuver to try to kind of save the rest of the crew, doesn't it just, like, drop down into space or into Earth orbit? That's when you get that whole thing about his the flashback scene with his kid and, like, him Earth crushing the kid.
Yeah.
They're not very far out regardless.
I thought that they showed him, like, in Saturn orbit in issue one.
Yeah.
So that's why I was confused.
Well, that's why I brought up the timeline earlier. I'm trying to piece exactly where this is in terms of the timeline of the mission. And I have, like, a vague idea, but I don't know if I know exactly when this issue happens in relation to the rest of the story.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. Is this, this is six issues, right? It was just in kind of ongoing.
I believe it's six issues.
Six, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it said to be continued and not concluded.
Right, right. No, that's good. That's good. I think, the way the story is right now, I'd need at least two more issues to wrap up the story, if not more. I mean, I would love for this to go on. I don't know how well it's doing. I don't usually check sales, but I love this kind of story. You guys know I love watching sci-fi stuff all the time, so yeah, I'm digging it. Let's rate it up. Ronnie, it was your pick. You go first.
I'm going to go 3.5 out of 5 for me.
All right.
I loved it, but like you said, it's like trying to figure out all the other stuff.
Yeah.
I love thinking when I'm reading a comic, but trying to actually figure out where the timeline goes kind of dampened the score for me.
See, so I think for that exact same reason, my score is higher. I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. Because I like when a comic gives me something to think about for a little while. Most comics don't do that. You know, you finish reading it and just like, okay, that was cool. Let me go read my, you know, next dozen books or whatever. But this one always has like a little something where it does make me think about what I just read. And for me, I enjoy that kind of thing. So 4 out of 5.
Okay. Makes sense.
Yeah. I'll go 4 out of 5 too. I thought there's a lot of good character stuff in here, and hopefully all that, plot question stuff resolves.
We should start doing official scores for books, and it'll be like a battle. It'll be like a Royal Rumble between the three of us, and then whoever has the worst score gets kicked out of the podcast.
Oh, wow. High stakes.
Fantastic. All right, let's go to Oberon number 4, written by Ryan Parrott with art by Milos Slefkovic, colors by Leonardo Pacioretty, and letters by Charles Pritchett. And there's a lot of chess going on in this book. Ching. All right, Oberon. Travis, you want to tackle some of this one?
Sure. I guess, you know, like, maybe, like, top line thing is, you know, Puck, Robin Goodfellow, does show up. I think we alluded to that earlier.
Yep.
So what's his deal? Like seems like he's been recruited by Titania to do something, and they led Oberon towards him, so... You know, question there. I guess I'm also curious about what is up with Bonnie. Because I feel like, you know, she's still at the center of this. And we've got one issue left. And, you know, again, in this issue, I feel like they hint towards something special about her. Because she's in the center of all this. She's like a protected person for Titania. So she's got, like, fairies protecting her. Titania, I think, seems to make a reference to, like, you don't know what she can do, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so she has some significance. And my assumption, given we still haven't seen any of Nevermen, is maybe whatever she is, her importance or what she can do is tied to them showing up.
Hmm. So when that last, well, I started feeling this way when Nick Bottom shows up.
It's a great name too, by the way.
It is a great name. So when Nick Bottom shows up, I was like, okay, there's like more Midsummer Night's Dream references. And then Puck shows up at the last page and I was like, okay, now Puck is here. It almost makes me like want to go back and reread Midsummer Night's Dream. You know what I mean? Like I haven't read this since high school. And I wonder if I reread that, if I could use that story to figure out what the plot of this book is. And I don't mean that in like a demeaning way at all, but I do wonder if like how much Ryan is using that original story to base this one out of.
Yeah, because it seems like pretty heavily, right?
Yeah. And the more I think about it, the more like it seems like there's got to be more connections in here, right? Because, like, even in Midsummer Night's Dream, you had that whole Oberon-Titania thing, and part of the plot was relating to Puck. But I think technically Midsummer Night's Dream is a comedy. Although, like, you know, comedy in Shakespearean times is very different than it is now. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go look up Greek comedy, and you'll know what I mean. It wasn't actually just like funny stuff. Comedy yeah. actually means something. Did we talk? We talked about that before, haven't we? Was it on this podcast or somebody else?
No, you talked about it on CTT.
Oh, okay, yeah, on Comics. Okay, yeah. But I do wonder, like, how much of this story is based out of the events of Midsummer Night's Dream. And with the introduction of Puck and Nick Bottom, I really do feel like there's a lot more here than originally I thought. Like, obviously, I was familiar with Titania and Oberon and all that, so I saw the connection. But seeing these characters come in here, that seems like much more important. Because Nick Bottom and Puck are probably like the most important characters of A Midsummer Night's Dream. They're the only characters that really show up throughout the entire book to advance the story elements of the play. And they're definitely more important than Titania and Oberon. So it really had me curious. And I don't know, like, maybe I'm thinking too much about it. You know what I mean? Travis, I know you like to go on face value a lot of times. I like to look for significance a lot more. But I want to throw that out to you guys. What do you think about that kind of thing? And again, I don't know how familiar you guys are with Midsummer Night's Dream, so maybe I'm just thinking too much about it.
I'm familiar with it, but like you said, like the last time I read it was in high school,
yeah.
which was longer than you.
20 years ago, at least. Oh, yeah. Yeah. yeah.
So, and to me, it kind of messes up, but like you said, I see the significance and of each thing, but I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure if we still know where we stand with this, though.
Yeah.
Like, actually, who is the actual bad person of the whole thing?
Right.
But, like, Travis, to go back to what Travis said, I still think the girl is significant. And she's, because it started with her going through the trial, right?
Right.
But I think she's a chosen one for a different meaning or a different path than what he initially thought.
Mm. Travis, you're very quiet over there. Give me some thoughts.
Well, I started out, so I was trying to give you guys a chance. I mean, as for, like, you know, Oberon and his, you know, aims, with Bonnie, like, I don't really necessarily get an indication that she's any more than a hostage, like, to him, you know?
Hmm.
Like, he's like, oh, I'll let her go if you give me back the throne, you know? So, you know, that seems to be what he's about. And, you know, like, you guys were talking about who's the villain. I feel like Oberon is the villain in this one, you know? Like, everybody's talking about he's a shady guy.
Yeah.
So he's trying to take back his throne that he was deposed for being, like, a monstrous tyrant. Like, I take that at face value, I think, you know? Like, I feel like he's the bad guy, and I don't necessarily know what's the significance of the Nevermen, given they're coming in the last issue. You know, and I don't know, in this issue, I feel like we've gotten more than anything on them, which is to say that it seems like if you take it on face value, when they catch up to somebody and slice them up, that they, like, are erased from memory or something, you know?
Hmm.
So, I don't know, like, I guess my gut reaction would be they catch up with Oberon and slice them up. And then Bonnie's like, "But okay, now go away. Problem solved."
So, but then what, though? There is no and then what. You see what I'm saying?
Like Bonnie, you know, fulfills her purpose, and, you know, the villain is defeated. I don't know.
Yeah, I still don't see the connection to Bonnie, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Then that's there has to be a then what.
Yeah, yeah. Because I see... Go ahead.
Well, she was under protection for a reason, you know?
Sure.
That's what they never have said, is why she's got magic guardians, and Titania, Queen of the Fairies, is watching after her, you know? I don't think that's the case for every teenage girl.
Hmm. So here's a weird idea. And again, I know, Ronnie, high school was a little bit longer for you than me. Travis, I don't know how much you remember of Midsummer Night's Dream. But I had this like weird idea because it seemed like there was so Nick and Bonnie are really forming a connection in this issue. And I don't know how much you guys remember of this book, but in A Midsummer Night's Dream, Titania falls in love with this like slave boy. So what if Bonnie's like Nick's kid, Nick and Titania's kid, and that's part of the reason why Oberon has this hold on Nick. And ultimately, like, he'll be part of the plan, right? Like, if we're, if Ryan's going through this, like, whole Shakespearean story and following a lot of the same plot points of that book, how much of that will be the resolution, right? And I only say that with the introduction of Nick Bottom and Puck again. Because they were key to that whole book. If I remember correctly, and again, you must may not be able to correct me, but Titania basically has this affair with a slave that she has. And then Puck is a servant of Oberon and he turns Nick Bottom into a donkey in order to like get back at Titania for Oberon. For having an affair with the slave. And to him, it's funny because this guy has a donkey face. But I do wonder, like, maybe if that's what the connection is. And what the implications of that, I don't know. I don't know what the implications are. But I just wanted to throw that out there and see what you guys thought. Because it seems like Nick and Bonnie really are forming this relationship. And maybe it's just because they're both kind of outside characters to this whole thing that are kind of along for the ride, but just curious.
Back in issue one or two when we were discussing it, didn't we think that she was somebody's kid anyway?
Well, yeah, I think we automatically assume like Titania and Oberon's kid.
Okay.
I mean, at least I did. I don't know. But, the more connections we have to Midsummer Night's Dream, the more I think, like, maybe there's something more going on. And now with this issue, I do wonder if, like, maybe Nick wasn't involved with Titania, and that's what the falling out was about.
That's the reason why, yeah.
Yeah.
Besides, Oberon's a dick, too.
Well, yes, he is a dick. But, and I then, mean, they explicitly mentioned the affair between Nick Bottom and Titania in this issue.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we have an ongoing thread, right? Like, we're having callbacks to the play. So it seems like the more we go into the series, the more important that original story becomes.
Yeah, that makes sense. Would you like that, though?
I think it'd be interesting. Pretty ballsy, actually, I would say. I mean, most people would consider Shakespeare, like, you know, I don't know about greatest of all time, but, like, you know, he's definitely, like, a classic English writer.
Top shelf.
Yeah, top shelf. And it's interesting when writers try to recreate certain stories and follow along those. And I think Shakespeare's one of those things that, like, I don't see very often being, like, played with, those kind of stories, right? I mean, like, Cullen's doing it with the biblical flood story, right? So it's not like this kind of thing doesn't happen in comics or in novels or TV or film or whatever. But I find that kind of stuff interesting. And it's just, I just don't feel like Shakespeare, at least now, is one of those things that happens with. I mean, I remember in the 90s, that was like an all-the-time thing, right? All those, like, teenage romance movies that were coming out, like...
Romeo and Juliet.
Romeo and Juliet, 10 Things I Hate About You.
10 Things I Hate About You.
Yeah. What's the other one with Freddie Prinze Jr.? Oh, God.
She's All That?
She's All That. Like,
no, all don't forget Harley about... White.
Yeah,
Romeo Must Die.
Romeo Must Die. Like, all those are based on Shakespeare stuff, right? And, like, there was an era where that was all the time. And I guarantee you, like, 99% of people had no idea any of that was based on Shakespeare. But, you know, like, it's cool to see. You know, and I think it's kind of ballsy to do it, in particular in comics, because I don't know if we have ever really had a lot of this in comics. Maybe like Fables. Like there's some elements of that in Fables. Right. But that's a Vertigo book. So, I mean, maybe I expect it more. It's just, it's kind of cool to see. And it's really well done, right?
Yeah.
Because it's giving a nod to the original, but creating this like wholly new and original story based out of that. And I think that's awesome.
Yep. I agree.
All right. Let's do final thoughts. Travis.
I think I am pretty good.
All right. Ronnie?
Yeah, I'm pretty good too.
Cool. I'm pretty good too. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, you're good.
Sorry.
Sorry, not sorry.
Sorry. Step into a slip gym. The only final thought I had is the whole stuff with Mother May I wish would have lasted a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was really interesting. It had been set up for a little bit. And this final battle that we got in this issue, it was awesome. But I almost wish that it would have taken up a little bit more of the issue. That's the only thing. That's all I got. Yep. But let's rate it up. So, Travis, you're going to rate it up first.
Cool. I will go 4.5 out of 5.
I like it. Ronnie?
I'm going 4 out of 5. That's what I gave the first three, so that's what I'm giving this one.
I will also give it a 4 out of 5, or 4.5 out of 5. I almost kicked myself out of this podcast.
Yeah.
4.5 out of 5. Yeah, I love it. I love it. You said it's one more issue, Travis?
Yes, to be concluded.
Cool. So, yeah, next one should be good. Maybe we'll figure out what's going on with Bonnie.
Yeah, or what the puck.
What the puck?
Episode title.
What a great episode title. Let me write that down.
It took us forever to get there, but we got there.
That's fantastic.
Good job, Travis.
Oh.
That's why you're not an intern anymore.
Thanks, guys.
Next week, we have one new book, and that book is Orphan Age number 2.
Also written by...
Oh, yes.
Ryan Parent.
No, it's not. That's it's Ted Anderson.
Oh, that is Teddy.
Yeah, no, Ryan's doing Volition.
Oh, okay.
Which you talked about last episode, and you would know that had you been here.
Sorry!
That's it. If you want to find us, you can find us on Twitter, at Rumbar316, at The Great Magnet, at Geekvine, and at Aftershock Pod. You can email, too. I guess, Ronnie, you got email, so I guess we should talk about we have an email. At aftershockpod@gmail.com. Is that right?
No.
No?
It's aftershockcentral@gmail.com.
Oh, see, good thing Ronnie's here, because I made the email, apparently. That's what I was told. But yeah. I don't remember, and that's what it is. So aftershockcentral@gmail.com is the email address. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time. Step into a slip gym.